Call to order, the Village River Forest Economic Development Commission meeting, Friday, March 23rd, 7:30 a.m., the community room of the Village Hall. We're going to take roll call.
Mr. Brown, Mr. Graham.
Present.
Ms. Fantetti Slapika.
Present.
Ms. Moss.
Present.
Mr. Brangle.
Here.
Mr. Newbecker. Chairman O'Connell.
Here.
You have quorum.
Okay. First of all, before we get started, I want to welcome Donna to our little group. If you want to just take a minute and just see, look at Donna shows up the first meeting with McDonald's cup. How about that?
Duly noted.
If you just want to take a minute and give
Purchase
us a little, huh? Me too.
No, keep that tax low.
If you just like to kind of give us a quick 1, 2, 3 on Donna and who you are and.
I went to OPRF High School. I got my degree in marketing and accounting from Eastern. I was in real estate for years, then I subbed for District 90. I now own River Forest Chocolates right here on Lake Street. We just celebrated our 7th year, and I'm happy to be a part of this committee.
Great. Thanks and welcome. What do we got? First thing is
minutes.
Minutes?
In front of you.
Okay. Okay, we want to motion to approve the minutes.
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Is this all in favor?
Yep.
All in favor? Aye.
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 All opposed? Okay. Okay. Next on our agenda, did we skip this or were we going
to? If there's any public comment?
Anybody?
Nope. Hearing none.
Okay. We'll move on. Okay. Next, we'd like to invite and welcome our guests who are going to share with us a little bit about the senior living facility proposed. Eric, can I give us a little background?
Sure. I'll introduce Lee Winter. Lee is the principal at Kaufman Jacobs for the development team that's looking at a redevelopment project at Chicago and Harlem. Lee's been in front of the village board to provide a preliminary overview. The development team is currently in the process of working to put together a plan development application for this site. They are scheduled to go to pre-filing with the DRB later in April, have their resident meeting, and then handle all the normal due diligence course of action items that take place during a plan development application. As part of that process, before they get too far into the weeds, what we want to do is provide an opportunity for the EDC to review some of the preliminary site plans, provide some feedback to them based on what you think of this project, some things you think they should either keep, potentially change, and have a dialogue with them to try to get as much information from various stakeholder groups here in the community before they put forward their application. As you recall, there was some concerns several years back when the Heinz project went forward that the EDC didn't get a chance to weigh in on that. So we're doing this on the front end to be as proactive as possible so that when the application gets submitted, there's as much information from as much of the groups as possible. I sent an email out to you earlier in the week that cited that policy and what your charge is. So there's no formal deliverable per se, but the EDC can provide feedback to the developer informally. They could support it. They could take a vote to recommend certain things back to the DRB. It really is at your discretion. So with that, unless there's any questions for me, I would turn over to Lee Winter, and Lee will introduce his team and walk you through their project. You can.
Very nice.
I try.
Such a sweet introduction. Friday morning, but he's happy to be here. Loyola won. White Sox won yesterday. Thank you very much. I'm Lee Winter with Kaufman Jacobs, and I've got Andy Coughlin here, who's the only person who didn't want to wear a tie today, so he's got to talk about the site plan in the building. Jay Patel, who makes sure that all the numbers make sense. And then, more importantly, our operating and equity partner, Bob Goronsky from Senior Lifestyle, who can tell you all about how these facilities operate and
you know, just the day-to-day things that are most important to you. So having said that, Coughlin, you ready? Come on. I'm done. This is all I had to do today. I brought you coffee. You got to do the rest, okay?
And just before you get started, Andy, in terms of time considerations, we usually try to stay to about an hour. Is there anyone else that needs to get a train?
Hour works.
I only need about 55 minutes to walk through this, so it should be. This is very brief. I'll just give you, as I think many people have already seen, you've had a chance to review this. And I'm Andy Coughlin with OKW Architects. And we're doing the planning and the design work. We're in the midst of working on actually the building design, the architecture right now. And there's a rich palette of precedent in town to choose from in terms of style and detail, which we appreciate. The project is a total of 110-bed assisted living memory care facility, which Bob will go into in some greater detail. It's a four-story building. There is parking under a component of the building. This is not unusual, and we're dealing with an urban environment where we allow the building consumes a fair amount of the property, and to accommodate the parking, we actually elevate the component of it, which in this case is the memory care facility. Sits over principally over parking. The entrances, there's curb cuts off of Harlem and Chicago Avenue. The entrance is actually to the facility is on the west side off of the Chicago Avenue entrance, where there's a drop off and some handicap parking. Loading is underneath the building. The floor height allows for would allow for truck and fire truck access through the site. And the services are sort of on that inboard face. The plan of this is to have all of the perimeter, the street-facing programmatic elements be all kind of active, engaging components of the building. So the creative studio is on the corner, fitness, salon, the great room, are all active, very active, glassy components of this. So the intent is that this is viewed as a lively, active place from the street. The main dining is at along Harlem Avenue, and it'll read as hospitality, as more hotel-like than as an institutional facility. There's no residents living on the grade level. All of the units, as you see from the plans, are stacked above that footprint with, as I said, memory care occupying the ring on the second floor, really over the north side of the property, and the other two floors above that, a mix or entirely assisted living on the third and fourth floor. Parking is actually beyond what is required per code, but accommodates a need that that Senior Lifestyles feels is a minimum that they require to service their facilities adequately. Building height is approximately 50 feet. We'll have that fine-tuned for the Development Review Board in a few weeks. Total project is a little under 100,000 square feet. Are there any questions about design planning that I can answer for you?
On the mechanical floor, on a roof level, the mechanical, are that HVAC stuff besides elevators?
Yes. There's a small amount of mechanical. Most of the mechanical is handled within the units, but there's mechanical to serve public spaces that are be up on the roof.
Well. Really what I'm referring to is compressors and the noise factor towards the residents immediately to the west, that's all. But it looks like they're closer to the Harlem side location,
everything
right?
Will be pulled back towards Harlem.
Okay.
On the perimeter, what kind of lighting do you put in here, Andy?
In terms of the parking lot lighting?
Yeah, the parking lot lighting, primarily, again, to Bob's point, along the west and, I guess, the north. You know, it's my understanding that you're acquiring the two houses to the north of, I'm sorry, to the,
to the north.
To yeah. The acquisition, there's the acquisition of the two houses to the north, so that'll be part of it. So,
yes.
So the lighting that will butt the residents on the north and on the west, what kind of lighting do you anticipate?
There'll be LED lamps, all cut off fixtures, low poles.
Okay.
The nice thing actually about this kind of planning is that the lighting, it makes it for a very easy cutoff circumstance because of the great majority of the parking is actually underneath the footprint of the building. So it's very easy to manage the light levels and to do cutoff lighting. The perimeter poles, any perimeter poles would be cutoff fixtures, so there'll be no light shining back on the residents on Bonnie Bray to the west.
Okay. And screening on that fencing, is it, what kind of, what
it's a board on board solid.
Okay.
So. Your ingress and egress onto Harlem Avenue.
Yeah.
That's both ways in and out, not right in, right out.
That's really we're working with Louie Abuna at KLOA, the traffic consultant, to sort out exactly the likely scenario for what IDOT will grant us in terms of that access. There's flexibility from the developer side, and we'll get as much freedom of movement as we possibly can.
And all of the residents here, do they have cars? This is not independent living at all, right?
No, very few residents here would have cars. Mostly staff and visitors.
Good morning.
Good morning.
The elevation, I understand why it's done this, but there are no windows or what have you. Can you talk about what it looks like as an entrance into River Forest?
I can't yet because we're just in the middle of, as I said to Lee, we're sketching over this yesterday. What we've actually been doing is research leading up to this, starting on the design work of River Forest architecture, because it's a broad palette. And really, there's some kind of iconic building types, both institutionally and residentially, of which there's components that we're going to take advantage of for the building. But ultimately, we want this to read, have the richness of detail that you find throughout the town. The windows are plentiful. This is not an institutional, the last thing we want is this thing to read as an institutional building. This needs to have an appropriate scale. I think institutional in the sense of like a there's buildings that have been recently built on the college campuses that feel very cold, some of the dormitories and things. This will not be that. This will be a much more depth to the facade, a lot of windows. It's important for the residents and the use of the scale and materials, masonry, stone, et cetera.
Thank you.
Hip roof, gable roof.
So there'll be windows.
Yeah, that is really...
I get it.
That diagram is just purely just to show massing, just right. To show the... And it's a programmatic element, so you understand what where each of the parts are.
I appreciate... Actually, I think I like the way you've held the edge. As the urban planner and architect on the EDC, I think this is great, a great start and great massing. So I commend you on that. Question about use... On the first floor, I understand the active uses within the facility will be there. Is there any sense of public use or engagement with public other than people visiting people that are here? Is there a component that's retail, if you will?
Mr. Winter would like to address that.
He's prepared for that. Huh?
It's because Eric beat me up so much that I this is like the third time I've had to do this, so I'm ready for this. Early on in the process, meeting with the village president, with Eric and the staff, and they wanted to see if we could really find any actual retailers that might occupy the first floor. And so we did that. We spent a lot of time trying to find retailers that might want to be at this intersection in a building like this. So just to briefly just give you the conclusion there, Harlem and Chicago really is a tweener that sits mm-hmm. between the bulk of the retail, as you know, at Harlem and Lake, and then the to the north at Harlem and North. And most retailers tend to be creatures of habit and creatures of the crowd. They want to go where everybody else goes. They're not going to take any chances. They're not going to want to go where there isn't any other retail. So we worked on that for 60 days and came up with the big fat zero. There was nobody that was really interested in coming here. So we had further discussions with the president and with Eric. And so what compromise was that what we're going to do architecturally is that first floor will be very, very transparent. And the salon services, the physical therapy services, and that great room will be open to the public. And so we're going to try to make that architecturally as inviting as possible for if people would like to come in, that they can come in and utilize those facilities. Does that answer the question, Tim?
It does. I'm thinking. I know it's a difficult site for retail. It is a tweener. It's on the edge. However, we have such limited opportunity for that any chance to redevelop, which I appreciate, is welcome. I think retail is important. So it's sort of an in-between retail. It has outside. I mean, you could presumably go in and use the salon if you want, right? That's what you're saying, sir.
Yes, somebody okay. from a neighbor of River Forest could come in and make an appointment and have their hair styled, yes.
Okay. Good. Okay. I think that's probably the best we can do. I appreciate your effort on it. So.
Well, and I think you understand. Just to go a little bit further into it, just so I want to reassure you, you're going to say, well, what do you find out in 60 days? So prior to this, the property was under contract to actually a partner of ours and a friend of mine, David Augusto from Draper and Kramer. And so David, for a year, was trying to find a retail tenant. So it's not just the fact that Lee Winter was unable or Kaufman Jacobs was unable to find a retailer. I mean, Draper and Kramer was looking at it for a year prior to that and couldn't bring anybody to that corner. So
I think the important part of it is it's design that you design it for the long haul, because we're at a point in time, and there's several of us who are involved in retail. So there's a point in time right now where things are a little bit light, and every store in the world is going to be on the internet, but there's certain things you can't do on the internet. So as long as it's designed with that element in mind, that at some point in another time where retail picks up and there's services that are needed in the neighborhood, that there's access to the building. So that's, I think, the point we're really focusing on.
And what is the creative studio? Now that I look at the plan and your conversation, and to that point, the salon and fitness seem to be more active, perhaps, or more engaged with public. Does it make sense to flip those?
Well, now you ask the question. I got to bring in the big gun. I got to bring in my traveling partner, Mr. Goronsky. Come on, I bought you an Egg McMuffin and a coffee, so you got to do something here today, okay?
Man, they're just sweetening the pot here, Andy.
Hi. My name's Bob Goronsky. I'm Vice President of Development for Senior Lifestyle. For those who don't know Senior Lifestyle, we are a Chicago-based company. We've been in business for over 32 years. We're the sixth largest operator of seniors housing in the country. And we've done everything from affordable housing to high-end luxury housing for seniors. We currently have about 180 communities in our portfolio in 27 different states. We're really excited about this opportunity. Creative Studio, to answer your specific question, is just a fancy name for an art studio. You know, the arts and crafts room. I've got to actually teach my team not to use the F word. You know, facility sounds so institutional. We're in the hospitality business first and foremost. Obviously with assisted living and memory care, there are elements of healthcare that you can't ignore. But we approach all of our seniors' housing with an eye toward the hospitality side. We want it to feel residential, to look residential. In an urban setting like this, one of the charges that Andy has is to make certain that even though this isn't sales tax producing retail on the ground floor, we want it to present appropriately in the cityscape with it looking like commercial on the ground floor. So when you see the elevations develop, there'll be a lot of glazing. The you know, the goal for us with any of our housing is to really be a community hub. So, you know, the reality is our hair salon, you know, we'll lease that space to, you know, a local operator who'll come in, you know, hopefully, you know, 5 days a week, you know, depending upon the demand. You know, sometimes it's 3 days a week. PT and OT space will, you know, needs to be vetted within this blocking plan, but that'll be a third party, you know, service that is, you know, leasing space in our building as an amenity, you know, and a convenience for our residents. So those are the two most likely opportunities for people to take advantage of, you know, service businesses. But the vast majority of the services those two will be providing will really be to our, you know, residents and, you know, their friends and family. But we certainly won't discourage the outsiders from coming in, because the more people we have coming into our building for various reasons, the more likely we are to make a positive impression on people and, you know, help us with sales and marketing in the future. We also go out of our way to be a community hub. We want to create a lot of activities for our residents within our building, but we also want to get them out into the community at large by organizing a lot of outside activities and, you know, having them utilize our transportation services. But we also love to utilize, like, our great room as, you know, community meeting space. It's not uncommon for the local Rotary clubs to have, you know, occasional meetings in our building. You know, and that, you know, kind of thing brings the outside world into our, you know, community and creates a positive energy. And again, it's good. The more people that know what we are, the better off, you know, our long-term, you know, financial situation is going to be, because, you know, we're in a business where there's still a stigma where everybody thinks seniors housing is, you know, the old folks' home or the nursing home down the street that you remembered as a kid. And in a lot of ways, we offer a product that nobody wants, but a lot of people need. And so when people come into our community for various reasons, whether it's to go to, you know, a Rotary Club meeting or Alliance Club meeting, or because we're a local polling place, what have you, they see firsthand that this isn't, you know, the old folks' home that they remembered as a kid. It's a really vibrant, you know, place. And when they have a family member or they have a personal need to look at a different housing situation for themselves that can provide some services, they're naturally going to think about us first, because we're located in the community they want to live in or they have lived in, and they've seen firsthand from these other experiences how wonderful the place is. I mean, it's really, you know, each one of these communities we, you know, design and program specifically for the target market. We are not a cookie cutter operator. If you go to our website, you'll see a wide variety of price points, service packages. This particular development will be very similar to the joint venture we're doing with Kaufman Jacobs in Park Ridge at Greenwood and Northwest Highway. It'll be a very high-end, full-service assisted living and memory care community that I think River Forest will be very proud of. You know, just to, you know, kind of continue the discussion, right now this looks like a $42 million investment in your community. You know, as we've said, it's a 100-unit development with assisted living and memory care. As an economic, you know, development commission, you'll be interested to know that we anticipate about 80 full-time equivalent employees to be created on a permanent basis, you know, beyond just the, you know, temporary construction jobs. That's a real, you know, exciting thing for a lot of communities to enhance the, you know, the job base in their town. And so it's about 80 full-time equivalents. You know, in today's dollars, it's probably, you know, close to $3 million of wages. You know, we have everything from, you know, entry-level jobs that are, you know, food service related, you know, dining room servers, bussers, you know, kitchen workers. We have CNAs, LPNs, you know, sales and marketing people, maintenance directors, administrative folks. So we've got a wide variety of wage earners that we'll be bringing in. And we love the fact that we're on Harlem Avenue here because it does allow a lot of our potential workforce easy access to their job.
So do you have on-site physicians that come for appointments?
We will have visiting physicians. So what we'll usually do is we'll have some flexible space that can be like a visiting doctor's office or a massage therapist room. They'll come on a sporadic basis. But we're basically, with assisted living, we're providing assistance with activities of daily living. So if people need help getting dressed in the morning, the meal preparation, medication reminders, help bathing, that kind of thing. But, the assisted living license does not allow us to provide true nursing services.
What about your memory care?
Memory
that
care
is a different level.
Well, memory care is licensed by the state of Illinois as assisted living, but it's designed and operated significantly different because of the safety factor. It's a special population that you really have to have additional staffing on site, additional caregivers, and a secure area so that nobody wanders off in a disoriented state and becomes a danger to themselves. So the basic services that we're providing are comparable. It's assistance with daily living activities, but we are very proud of our memory care programming. We call it Embrace. We finally took kind of all the best practices of all the communities we have around the country and created a specific program that we're rolling out nationally. And it's called Embrace, and it's really focusing on stimulating all the different senses, and doing everything from having little garden plots in our outdoor space where people will grow the herbs and stuff that they'll end up utilizing in their daily activities to create food, snacks, or whatever and have that full experience of cooking with stuff that you grew. We have an aromatherapy program. We have an incredible reading program where we have specialized books that are kind of the almost like the cliff notes of all the classics that people used to write or read when they were younger, but are a little shorter and condensed so that somebody with memory issues can stay focused long enough where it triggers the memory and you can actually have a book group discussion like like any of us might have if we're in a book club or something, but really embracing each individual moment so that people aren't just warehoused and stuck in a corner to be somebody else's concern instead of the families. We're really trying to create a vibrant lifestyle, even though that short-term memory is a tragic issue that they're dealing with. But the staffing is certainly a lot more because of the needs and the health of those residents.
So I have two questions. So you brought up outdoor space. So the outdoor space is limited in this 13 by 38 foot area?
So the outdoor space, you've got a little bit of outdoor space on the ground floor that's really just more cosmetic than usable space, but on the upper floors, especially for the memory care, you will see, where is it? There's a courtyard. If you go to the second floor plan, level two, so it's sheet C2,
uh-huh.
You'll see a big white space, like a donut, on the second floor that says memory court.
Right.
That'll be a beautifully landscaped space for our memory care residents to be able to go outdoors in a safe, secure environment, without any concern about them wandering off.
So that's those are the only two outdoor spaces then.
Yeah,
and then
it's the trade-off of being in an urban area.
Right. And then back down to the ground level one.
Mm-hmm.
Is there fencing around that, or is it just shrubbery?
I don't have the landscape plan in front of me, or the preliminary one, but.
Okay. So while you're looking for that, just real quick. So obviously from a community services standpoint, you know, police and fire will obviously be involved in as we go forward. But typically, are your residents involved in any other types of, is there any other community support? So for example, you know, the senior program through the township, or, you know, or anything else that you know, as people kind of talk about this, that, you know, there may be extra resources necessary to serve your residents?
No, actually, I guess the question, the way you worded it, we certainly, as I said, we want to be a community hub, and we want to engage with all the different, you know, groups that are out there. So we're bringing the community at large into our community and getting our residents out and about. But as it relates to, like, village services, obviously we're not going to burden the school system. You know, the history of the burden on, you know, fire departments and police departments is actually quite minimal. You know, if we're engaging with the local community center, it's going to be because the community center is excited about getting people to participate. We haven't finished our third party real estate tax analysis yet, but just based upon comps that we have, you know, in Cook County, you know, we're anticipating paying about $450,000 a year in real estate taxes. So we'll be paying more than our fair share, you know, for the services that we do, you know, rely upon. But if, you know, to the extent there's, you know, opportunities to do cross programming with the local schools, you know, nearby schools are always a wonderful thing if you can get a, you know, some sort of intergenerational programming going. And similar with a local senior center, if there are some great activities going on that we can piggyback, we would do that, but not in a way that would be burdensome, in a way that, you know, would be helpful to the mission of those, you know, those groups.
Great, thanks.
I have a question. On the parking lot on the north side of the property, does that incorporate the current layout of the property, or does that incorporate some of the homes to the north?
The site, the plan that you see there assumes that we've purchased the two homes to the north of the bank as well. So that parking would be where the single family homes are.
Are you under contract?
We're under contract with the bank.
We're not under contract with the homes, even though Deborah's here representing the Sams, who live right next door, and the Johnsons are also interested in selling them. We can't get under contract until we get a little further down the line, but they have, I don't want to
And it's an interesting situation too, because we want to be respectful of those homeowners. We don't want to, you know, tie their hands and then get through this process and find out that perhaps, you know, the village doesn't want to embrace what we're proposing to do.
In terms of services for the residents, I'm just noticing that there doesn't seem to be any dedicated technology room.
Preliminary blocking plan. We embrace technology like you wouldn't believe. The entire building will be Wi-Fi enabled, so all of our residents will have access to a secure network for their use. We'll have a shared network for visitors. We've got some incredible technology as it relates to, you know, emergency call systems and, you know, monitoring of our memory care residents, you know, wearing, you know, bracelets so that we can monitor where they are at all times. So if they do, you know, wander out of secure areas, we can get alerted very quickly. With our memory care program, we have some incredible video technology that is interactive, where our residents can play, you know, music, Skype with family members, interact. In fact, one of the things that we got rid of is, if you've ever been to a typical, you know, assisted living community or even a lot of independent living communities, or memory care communities, you'll see memory boxes or purse shelves. We've outside of each person's apartment door that they can kind of customize as a cue that that's my home. We've replaced those with Nix Play, you know, digital frames, so that the family members, when somebody moves in, can load up all the old photos of the family, you know, to play and, you know, at somebody's front door, you know, as a way of kind of, you know, especially for memory care residents, cueing them that, oh, there's, you know, a picture of me in my, you know, my Army uniform from when I was younger. But it also spurs a lot of great conversations with the residents and their family members and staff, because people get to know a lot more about each one of our residents as a person when they see, you know, the whole family history with, you know, the different photos and that. But, you know, technology is something that, to be relevant long term in this business, we have to stay on the cutting edge of it. And so we're, you know, our traditional library ends up being, you know, a looks like a library, but it's also a computer lab and business center for our residents.
Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, on the west and north sides, where you indicate a 6-foot fence, which is according to our codes, if the residents, the immediate residents, would prefer, this is a question, would prefer a taller fence, since the whole, you know, maybe an 8-foot fence, just because you're going to have enough people coming in and out. I don't know. It might be something that the neighbors might prefer as opposed to a standard 6-foot mm-hmm. fence.
The only time we care about height of fence, you know, is if we have ground floor outdoor space for our memory care, then we would personally be asking for the okay to do an 8-foot high fence. But like Lee said, we'll do whatever, you know, the village and our neighbors prefer, because, you know, it doesn't really matter to us, you know, to a point. I mean, we want it to be attractive. We don't want it to look like a prison.
Right.
I think when we get through the resident meeting, we'll get that feedback from the residents, and if that's the desire, we can always fold that type of variation into the plan development application.
And I think equally important is that the building itself on that side is designed to be, it's going to be highly visible from the residents' perspective and from everybody coming east on Chicago. So all sides are important, I think, in that case. So the design of the building becomes equally important, I think.
Yeah, and all four sides of the building will present just as
not
high
a back
quality
side.
Yeah.
Right. With materials drop off.
On the east side, because the entrance is on the west side, so it is equally important.
I'm sure you're looking at it. But no, I think that's great. And the other comment on architecture, and you sat down too soon, but I think it's great you're looking at River Forest examples. Obviously, look at Oak Park too. And I think clearly there is context across the street with some of those older buildings. Good or not, I mean, they do create a context. So as this is designed, you look at that, particularly at the corner, I think it's important to see if you can draw cues from across the street as a composite so that those two read together. This is all stuff that you know, I'm sure. And I know there's sort of a symmetry in this building right now as you go north, which could be fine. Again, I'd look across the street, look at the context, and see if there's cues. Maybe the corner, maybe the first two-thirds reads as a building in line with the things happening to the east. I think context is very important. Obviously, we have a gas stations, right, which you can ignore those.
Yeah.
But, and then tied to that, lighting and landscape, I know there's codes, but River Forest and Oak Park are both lush environments. To the extent we can exceed that, I think that's always a benefit. And then the last point, I think your notion of not being institutional, being hospitality-driven, and more even the look of some retail, or again, contextually responsive to what's happening across the street, is very important. This building ought to look like it was built there. I think fits in well. I think the uses, and that's why I was asking what's in the corner, what are the high-activity uses that could be in the front, so I think carefully look at that so that reads like it's an active active space all the time. So I guess that, is there any integration, although Harlem is not a, not the most bucolic street to look out across, but I see you have a terrace here on the first floor. The main dining hall is there. Is there any engagement? Is there any landscaping, terrace there? The doors open up and it, you know, the only benefit is you have a street light there that actually slows traffic down. As you get in between lights, it's rip-roaring cars flying down, as you know. But I think to the extent there's some engagement on Harlem and equally on Chicago with these uses, whether it's windows, terrace, even landscaping, awning, whatever it may be, it sort of makes it look like it's engaged. So.
That's okay, yeah. Because we drill into the details.
Yep.
Of the
yeah.
Program.
But you do have that outdoor, you know, patio space off of the main dining room, so that, you know, there will be opportunity for outside dining. You know, surprisingly, you know, as busy as Harlem Avenue is, I will tell you, when we've built in urban areas, you know, it always amazes me that the street side units seem to fill up first, yeah, because people like seeing what's going on in the world. And I think, you know, because the traffic does have to slow down, you know, at that corner because of the traffic light, I don't think it's going to be an oppressive outdoor area. I think it'll actually be very engaging, you know, to sit, you know, outside and,
right,
you know, enjoy the afternoon.
Well, and there's some context there, too, even in, as you go further into Oak Park, there's restaurants, there's things. So it's, you know, there's a little bit of a node there that I think you could respond to.
Yeah, we love this site because it feels close enough to where everybody wants to be, you know, at Lake Street there. I mean, we're kind of like just on the outer edge of that, and we feel like, you know, you do feel connected to all that River Forest and Oak Park have to offer.
I have sort of similar reactions. Just the way it's turned in, looking at the side of a resident's house, I'm just trying to get my arms around that, and I respond to everything Tim has said, just how that outside looks. Maybe talk a little bit about the signage. You know, how are you going to make this look like it's an inviting place to come in? On the one hand, you want good signage from the corner. On the other hand, you don't want, obviously, a big neon light going into the resident's second floor, which it seems only about two parking spaces away there. So talk a little bit about that, maybe.
Do you guys, have you kind of, like, started getting that deep into the signage? I mean, signage is important because we want people to know,
right,
who we are and what,
right,
we are. But, obviously, we need to be, we don't want to be gaudy and tacky. But
I do.
Or institutional. Yeah.
No,
yeah.
In all seriousness.
They're communities, they're not facilities.
Right. In all seriousness, you know, we're blessed that it is at a busy intersection. But we also want to make sure that people coming here are going to be able to find the building as easily as possible. So it's going to be good signage. It's not going to be overbearing. It's not going to be dwarfing. It's not going to be, I hate to use it, but Trump-like. It's going to be something that we, you know, it's a lot of these visits are emotionally charged. So you want to make sure that people aren't flying down because we didn't do a good enough job of being able to signal, here's an entrance to the building here, here's the other entrance. So that's really the goal as to that actual signage program. We have not, we haven't finalized that, but you understand where we're going to. It's going to be.
Unless Andy's got some ideas. I mean, typically, what we would do is a small monument sign at each entrance. So one off of Harlem, you know, identifying the name of the building and, you know, the street address, and then one at the Chicago entrance.
One of the things we've done. That we'll likely do here is an extension of the base of the building is to carry a garden wall, a mesa, a brick garden wall that'll screen, because you want to integrate, because we're elevating the second floor on that north end. I want it all tied in so it all looks architectural, all looks like it's part of the same building. So carry a brick garden wall
screens part of the parking, also provides opportunity for the effectively the monument sign, so you can do something really beautiful, mounted, backlit, that's mounted at a height that still becomes visible. As somebody's coming from the north, you want to be able to have signage so you can see that there's a point of entry off of Harlem, as well as some signage on the corner, and then again off of Chicago Avenue doing something similar with that. So the treating signage, the kind of the streetscape treatment all ties into the architecture of the building. So it'll all be integrated very nicely.
Thoughts, ideas, questions, anything else? So I'm a little bit befuddled as to obviously as part of the economic development group, you know, what we're trying to do is spur development within the community, where some of us have, you know, who've lived here on and off over the years, have kind of looked at this as one of and I hate to use it because I've sat in enough zoning board meetings and things where people talk about gateway to a community, but you know, truly we have a couple of gateways to our community, and this is one of them. So I like the work that you've done. I think, you know, it's going to be successful. You know, I don't know what kind of recommendation or what, you know, what the expectation is of boards above us or below us or whatever, but you know, if you're just kind of.
Yeah, so this is actually the first project that's running through that new policy since the Heinz project, and so what we're trying to do is ultimately build either some support for the project through these stakeholder groups, or if there are concerns, poison pills, whatever you want to call them, that those are identified now so the developer has a sense of like, okay, what am I walking into when I have these meetings? I mean, the general feedback I'm getting from all of you today, you're providing some questions, but there seems to be a general support for the project. If I'm putting words in your mouth, please let me know and correct me. But I think that's what we want to get for the developers, A, to get that feedback, which I think you've provided him some very good feedback, and then offer either support or, you know, if it was a project that said, you know what, we think you guys have missed the mark and this is the wrong place for this and here's why, we'd want to provide that feedback to them at this time as well.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, from my perspective, I think, you know, my biggest concern, and as you guys have probably dealt with on all these things, is, you know, you are going to get in front of some people who live right behind you who are going to have a lot of questions for you. That's the one piece that, you know, that's in your court to handle. And, I think you've made some great efforts. The fencing, the lighting will be appropriate, and it's just kind of, taking care of your neighbors now.
So. That said, I think you're likely a better use than what's there today. So, I mean, not that a bank's bad, but I think this has the potential to be more active and engaged, done properly and architecturally better than what's there today. So that's why the nature of our comments, I think, really are how do we improve and enhance that corner? Because today is, you know, it's okay, but I think it could be a lot better.
Just a comment on that, on the lighting. You know, our River Forest has our traditional concrete posts that barely light anything, so we have a great subtlety. But then what you're proposing here are, you know, extending out. I don't know if it's obviously more efficient, but it's not necessarily in keeping with the community.
We've actually upgraded all the lampposts to retrofit LED fixtures. So what they would be putting in, the color temperature sometimes doesn't match, but we could always work with you on that and let you know what the color temperature is of the existing lighting that's been upgraded.
But I'm not talking about, you know, the upgrade to LED lights is one thing, but the actual post itself, you know, our concrete.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Traditional.
Mm-hmm. Concrete.
Well, I mean, it's years ago, I remember on the board, we made a point of we don't want extensive increase in lighting. We wanted the subtlety.
Right.
Subtleties might be very subtle.
Right.
Just to Chairman O'Connell's point, you know, from the beginning we realized that the neighbors along Bonnie Bray, who have quite substantial investment in lovely houses, is going to be the biggest thing that we have to overcome. So from the beginning, Andy Coughlin with, you know, on our architecture staff, and Wendy Schulenberg from Daniel Weinbach. I mean, they understand that we've got to do everything over and above in order to make sure that we are a good neighbor, that we present ourselves correctly, and they're not embarrassed to say, you know, where they live now all of a sudden. So we're going to do everything and beyond everything in order to accommodate those folks.
Yeah, and the most important thing is just the communication, right? You know, it's key. The more we can, you know, talk to our immediate neighbors, the better off everybody's going to be, because, you know, the biggest fear usually is the unknown. And I think, you know, once people know what we're doing and we hear what their concerns are and can properly address them, I don't see it being a big problem as long as, you know, as long as we can actually get people's attention. And I'm certain that in this community, our neighbors will take full advantage of our offers to meet with them.
Great, thanks.
And the other thing I would just point out too, you talk about investment in the community. Obviously, anywhere between $30 to $40 million of investment is not an insignificant amount of number. And the property, we haven't seen the reports yet, obviously, but the property tax that would be generated on these properties would nearly quadruple of what's there now. So that's a significant point to the village as well. And the other thing I would point out too, this project originally was 5 stories tall on just the bank site. And so in our discussions with Lee and his team over the last several months, we've worked to talk about expanding the footprint and then lowering the height of the building. So that's something that they've been very responsive to. Obviously, they're engaged with the neighbors in Harlem as well. So it's been a very collaborative process so far. And we're, from the staff perspective, we're looking forward to seeing this project continue on in the process.
And the only other thing I would add to some of the issues that Tim raised is if you would take a look at, you can go on the Senior Lifestyle website and you can see almost every building is a different architectural style that reflects the community. If you want to look at our recent project that actually Andy is the architect there in Park Ridge, that's not that type of building we're bringing here, but I just want to tell you that essentially we go to the community and we try to ascertain what is it that really brings out the best for this building in that context. And you know, we've succeeded. I mean, Park Ridge is going to be a gorgeous facility. You can take a look at that. You can take a look at what Bob and his group did up in Northbrook at North Shore Place. And neither one of those are what we're going to be doing here. But I just want to
see both ends of the spectrum. One, you know, in Northbrook, they were adamant that we put mansard roofs on the building because they felt that that was representative of their community. And so that's what we did. And, you know, they felt it brought the massing down and fit with their flavor. And, you know, Park Ridge, it's a much more modern, you know, almost commercial looking building on the exterior. But as far as services go on the inside of, you know, this development, you know, there'll be very comparable services to what we're offering in Park Ridge and in Northbrook, but just in a different envelope.
But I think the goal is, architecturally, is that we will create something that you believe has always been there, that fits there, that's natural, it doesn't look like it was dropped in from outer space, and that 5 years from now and 10 years from now, you're going to say that really worked out well. I mean, we're long-term holders of real estate, and we're not interested in having a facility that if we screw up at the beginning, we're not going to be happy with. So we take a lot of time and make sure that what we produce is something that community is going to really appreciate and open up to. So that's why we brought Coughlin in to see if he's got a little left in the gun. So,
I want to thank you for coming in this
morning. We forgot one little question. The ability to financially complete this project, what are the parameters? I don't know your balance sheet. I don't know your borrowing capabilities. I don't know cash flow. You know, the economy lately has been exciting. And in other words, and obviously you're not starting to do, you know, go through this process without a certain degree of comfort, but talk to us about this.
Sure.
I'm happy to answer.
We're going to let them. We'll let the money man talk about it.
Yeah, so right now we're in an environment where this development, if it moves quickly, we will have no trouble financing it. You know, Senior Lifestyle has developed and opened 12 new communities in the past 3 years. Because we're such a good operator, we have access to a lot of construction financing and institutional capital partners who routinely invest in our developments. And because of its location here in River Forest, we'll have no shortage of financial partners to choose from to do the institutional investment. Generally, each one of these developments is set up as a single-purpose entity where, in this case, a joint venture between Kaufman Jacobs and Senior Lifestyle will be the general partner or managing member of the development. Senior Lifestyle will be the property manager of the development. Right now, financing, you can do construction financing for 60% of the total development costs, and then 40% would be equity, of which the general partner would have at least 10% of that, and then we bring in an institutional equity investment partner for the other 90% of the capital piece. And again, because we're good operators, I mean, Kaufman Jacobs got an incredible balance sheet and they're great developers, but even they know that in order to finance these developments after the recession, all the banks and all the institutional equity is going to require sponsorship by a solid operator as well.
Have your financials been presented to the village?
They haven't been requested.
Oh. Not yet. Okay. I just asked. That's all. I'm done talking now.
That was great.
It is the economic development commission. It's a good question.
You made the point that if this is done quickly.
Well, who knows? Because we all survived 2007 and 2008 and how quickly things changed. So time is always the enemy. Right now, there's no end in sight for access to capital to do these developments as a solid operating team and as a solid development team. But who knows when the next recession is looming? The only shift I have seen in the market in the past 2 years is 2 years ago we could get 65% loan to cost on a new construction deal with it being non-recourse after construction completion. The banks are starting to get a little more conservative, so the most recent deals that we're closing right now are 60% levered as opposed to 65%. So there's a little bit more conservatism in the marketplace, but there's certainly no evidence of any recession or any type of wall being hit in our sector. In fact, there's a lot of people from Wall Street and elsewhere that are getting into the seniors housing investment business because they see the demographics long term and how the aging population is just going to grow dramatically over the next decade and a half. And there's enough of a history now of operations and a lot of publicly traded companies. We're the largest privately held operator of seniors housing in the country, but there are a lot of big publicly traded companies, a lot of REITs who specialize in this type of investment, and there's a legitimacy to the seniors housing industry that wasn't there 20 years ago from an institutional capital standpoint. So there's, as long as the sponsorship is solid and there's no national recession, there should be no trouble finding financing here.
I just noticed that a certain assisted living facility in Oak Park on a corporate publicly traded company had some financial difficulties through rapid expansion.
Yeah.
That's, you know,
yeah,
so
I don't like to take
shots. I'm not going to go into names, but you know what I'm coming
exactly
from.
I know exactly what you're talking about, and it's one of the things I'm proud of, having worked for Senior Lifestyle the past 25 years, is that, you know, as developers, we all have the urge to do the next deal. As a privately held company, you don't have the same need to do the next deal that a publicly traded company has. I mean, Sunrise was the perfect example. Years ago, they were the golden child of the seniors housing industry. They figured out how to do assisted living wonderfully, and they were going into all these higher income areas, building their cookie cutter, you know, product on every, you know, highly visible street corner near a grocery store, and the income levels were really high and they couldn't miss. But when they went public, there was that gun to their head to grow at all costs, and so they started going into markets that they weren't necessarily the best fit for, or their product wasn't needed, and they were doing deals just to satisfy their shareholders and not, you know, with the view of long-term stability. So, you know, as you know, Kaufman Jacobs is privately held and Senior Lifestyle is privately held, you know, the principals of our companies want to be in business, you know, for another 30 or 40 years. They're not looking to satisfy the shareholders and pump up the value of the, you know, the stock price because of the growth projections we can show. We want to grow the portfolio because we want to be a very, you know, large, stable, excellent operator of seniors housing. And as long as we grow in a controlled way and go to the right markets at the right time and provide the right product at the right price point, we're going to be, you know, very successful. But, you know, we say no to a lot of opportunities that come our way, strictly because we think that the rents won't support it, or we don't think the demand is there. We've been looking around this immediate area for quite some time, and even the right site hadn't come along until, you know, Lee and Jay, found the folks at TCF Bank were interested in selling. And then we got excited because of its location, not only in this community, but on a prominent corner adjacent to the heart, you know, of the town. We see the trials and tribulations of some of our larger, you know, publicly held companies, and that's why you'll see on a lot of our marketing material, we accentuate the fact that we're a family-owned business still, and we think that resonates with our investors and with our residents and their family members.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm done. That was a great point. Thank you. No. Thanks. Anybody else?
So, will you keep us in the loop? Will they come back? What's your suggestion, Eric?
Yeah, I mean, right now, unless there was something specific that you wanted them to give you information back on, they wouldn't formally come back to this group. Their next step is to have their pre-filing, then have their resident meeting, and then submit their plan development application. Certainly, we can share that information with you so that you're aware of how that's proceeding, but there wouldn't be a formal check-in back to this group at this time.
Yeah, I think we appreciate being kept in the loop and just seeing how it advances, because I think it's an exciting project.
Yep.
Great.
Okay.
Again, thank you very much for coming in this morning. We really appreciate
it. Thank you.
And good luck with the rest of the process.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay, we got a couple other things real quick that we just want to kind of touch base on. On the business roundtable, I'll be brutally honest with you. I haven't had an extra minute to do a thing with this based on some other stuff that's going on. So,
you're picking colors for your new office?
No, I'm not. I'm not picking colors for my new office. Hang on one second.
we'll have another meeting. We'll probably convince our March and April meetings, so we'll have a meeting in early May.
Yeah.
So maybe we can get something put together for that meeting.
So do we just want to give a quick update on a couple things?
I would keep it very brief.
Okay, I am going to keep it very brief because I got to go to work.
Okay, yeah.
So here's a couple things, just real quick. We're going to have a work group meeting on Lake and Park a week from Tuesday. We wound up with two developers on that one that came out of the RFQ process, and now they're going to roll into the RFP process. And so, you know, we'll give you some more information on it, but I think we had three really good developers come in, and the two were, we think were more in kind of the feel of their development met, you know, kind of fell into the community better than the third one. So so that's going to be moving along. You may hear some stuff going on. There's a lot of activity going on at the corner of Harlem and Lake right now. So we have been meeting with the asset manager for the development and the leasing people for the development. Whole Foods is trying to expand their store. They we thought they had two options that they were going to look at, one being a redevelopment of the DSW space and some other configurations over there, and in order to get them to a 50,000 square foot space. The other one is the redevelopment of the Sears at Harlem and North, which is a joint venture between Tucker and Seritage. And that one has a lot of elements to it, including condos above the Sears, a Lifetime Fitness Center, the property being ringed by residential development, some stuff going on at the auto center. So that's point number two. And so we had a meeting with the VP of real estate for Whole Foods 2 weeks ago and kind of laid out our case for River Forest. And then, and you know, there's a couple issues that we're trying to work through. And then after the meeting was over, we learned that there's a proposed development on the southeast corner of Harlem and Lake Street that includes the Pier 1 and all that stuff. There's about 115,000 square feet that they control on that side of the street too. So there's a lot of moving parts in it right now. Eric's been working hard to, you know, bring everybody together. Kathy's been involved a lot. You know, we're trying to get to the division president of Whole Foods to get them to come in. So there's lots of moving parts going on right now. The one part that they did come to us on was they wanted to partner on this because of the investment that they're going to be making. And so Eric's doing some economic analysis on that to figure out how we could partner with them a little bit. So just a lot of moving parts.
Partner with
Heitman and the Teachers Fund. It's the Hawaii Teachers Pension Fund that owns it. You know, to do this development, they'd have to add a parking deck, and there's big investment being made. So, and you know, frankly, you know, we want to keep them. You know, it's you know, I mean, the demographics, everything that you know, you show these people at Whole Foods, it's like, really, you're gonna go to Harlem and North and deal with the, you know, your demographics, your, you know, median household income drops significantly, lots of different things. So so we're in the middle of a fight right now on that one. So
our Amazon.
Pardon me?
It's our Amazon.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, and it's interesting because just a couple of things, just, you know, a lot of these store closings, you know, they're talking about Toys R Us, that Amazon taking those is you know, distribution centers. I learned the other day that's what they're going to, you know, Walmart is evaluating the Sam's Clubs and the Walmarts that they've just closed. You know, these are all going to be e-commerce buildings. There's not going to have any employees, but they're going to, you know, a lot of activity. And then Mid-America is working on, you know, a backup plan just in case, but, you know, we don't know what that's going to look like, but, you know, we're not throwing up the white flag yet. So more to come on that.
We had our North Avenue TIF informal meetings. We did make through Kathy's efforts, and then also they showed up the folks from the, I'm going to butcher their official name, but the North Avenue Development Group.
TDAG?
Yeah, I don't know what the acronym is that you had mentioned, Tim. They actually came to two of the meetings and offered their support on any level, whatever we want that to be. As we move forward with our process. So I've made a contact with Judith Alexander and asked her to include me on to the extent they would like our involvement with their group, or at least participating in meetings even on a very high level. So we did get some feedback from some of the residents and businesses. We're in the process of finalizing those draft reports with a consultant, and we'll be marching on in the process for the TIF for North Avenue.
And then Lutheran Family Services, you know, the village owns that now.
Right.
I heard that they've given you notice that they're leaving.
Yeah, so we extended their lease through June, July, I don't remember the exact date, but we've extended it for through the summer. They've identified another location. I believe they've executed a lease. They just need time to move over there, so.
Yep.
So. And then short term, we're just nothing with that?
Correct. We'll be in a hold position.
Okay. Anything else going on?
There's a million other things going on.
Are there any implications, and I know you're in a lawsuit now on Montessori, that I want to bring that up, but is that something on the radar for us to consider?
I would say probably not at this point. Obviously, we were served. We've turned that over to our insurance carrier. The insurance carrier has assigned our village attorney to that case. So they have some more of the background on what's been going on there. And at this point, all I would say publicly is that from the press release that we issued, we were disappointed about what happened. This is an agreement that was made 20 years ago, mm-hmm. and nothing of that agreement has changed. And so we'll continue to defend ourselves and the village vigorously. And if you have any other specific questions, I'm happy to talk offline about that.
And progress with the comprehensive plan?
This past Monday night, there was a status with the consultant and the plan commission. They provided a copy of the issues and opportunities report. That's available online if you'd like to read that. And as part of that, we are now starting to move into some of the visioning exercises and process. And we'll be actually putting out a release pretty soon. In April, we're going to have a meeting, I think it's at Concordia, for the community to attend to provide additional feedback in the process.
And not to belabor that, but does John come back to us? I mean, or individually, or is it up to us as citizens to go to that? I'm curious. I did the economic development component of a comprehensive plan is critical.
Sure.
That's sort of hand and glove kind of thing where it'd be interesting to see if there's any interaction.
Yep, let me talk to John. No problem.
I know he's got a lot going on. But
no, that's okay.
And just kind of, just to stay on the John subject for a second, if you see him, thank him, because he's really kind of helped us out, and he's been shepherding
us. John Housiel.
John Housiel. He's been shepherding us through this whole Lake and Harlem thing, too. He's been, you know, kind of giving us counsel and, you know, ideas and thoughts and stuff. So if you see him, thank him for that. So, anything else?
That's it.
Meeting schedule. We have
May 11th would be the next meeting. It's the second Friday of the month. May 4th? May 11th?
Both of them are bad. I'm coming back from trips. We move to the 18th. I'm sorry. I got two Thursday night presentations out of town.
Okay. How does May 18th look?
May 18th, every.
Is that ICSC?
I'm not.
20th.
Well, you probably go on Friday for, you know, big week out there. I'm only going for a short time.
I'm in and out of there as fast as I can.
20th through 23rd is formal, but yeah, if you go.
Yeah, okay.
May 18th. Yeah. I'm out of the
country.
Oh, okay.
Anywhere
exciting?
England, Ireland, Scotland,
Iceland.
That's
exciting.
That's awesome. Wow.
Go to Rhode Island.
Okay. May 18th, yep.
Let's shoot for that.
Okay, we'll shoot for that. If we have to move it.
If we got to move it, we move it. So if we check Lee.
Yep, Lee and Kyler.
Okay, if there's nothing else, motion to adjourn.
Seconded.
Okay, we're done. Thank you very much.
Thank you.